Here in the U.S., if you have to go to the bathroom, chances are there is a toilet just a few steps away. That's not the case for some 4.5 billion people across the planet who don't have access to toilets and safe sanitation systems. Even in some of the most poverty-stricken areas of the U.S., there are Americans who still don't have an adequate means to get rid of their sewage. Columbia University professor Inga Winkler of the Institute for the Study of Human Rights is one of the world's leading experts on sanitation. She'll speak tomorrow night at ISU's Bone Student Center. She tells ISU's Judy Valente, GLT's Judy Valente, that most government officials would rather not discuss what to do with the public's excrement.
It's about using toilet. It's about urinating. It's about defecating. And that is what sanitation is about for every single one of us. And then in addition to this private act of defecating and urinating, it's what happens with feces and urine and excreta and wastewater afterwards. It's managing wastewater, it's making sure that it is disposed of properly, that it doesn't end up in other people's drinking water or in the environment or in the food supply chain.
In what parts of the world is this a particular problem? And can you give me some specific examples that you've seen in your research?
The lack of adequate sanitation is a problem all over the world. I mean, it doesn't really matter where we look. When we look at some of the figures, the recent estimate that the United Nations has put out, they estimate that 4.5 billion people in the world do not use safely managed sanitation services. So by safely managed, we mean what I just described in terms of proper disposal and proper management of waste to be included. If we just look at basic sanitation, just having access to be able to use a toilet without even looking at what happens afterwards, we still look at 2.3 billion people across the world that do not have access.
In some of your writings, you give specific examples about what children, for example, have to go through.
Yeah, I think in particular for girls and when not having access to sanitation, I mean, whether from some of my work in Nairobi, just the lack of privacy that girls or women or pretty much everyone experience, having to walk to use a latrine for quite a while, having to wait until you're able to use it. Then, I mean, just imagine not having a toilet in your home and having to walk somewhere at night, having to ask your neighbor, and then imagine maybe having diarrhea and having to ask your neighbor 10 times a day. We can look at the global numbers, but then once you really look at the individual, I think it makes it much more real because it's so hard to imagine from our perspective, sitting here in the U.S. In a relatively privileged environment, to imagine not to have access to sanitation.
Are there any parts in the United States where this might still be an issue?
Yes, there are surprisingly many parts of the U.S. where this is still an issue. And I think the perception is often that we look at other parts of the world, we kind of imagine looking at sub-Saharan Africa, we imagine looking at South Asia, but we don't really look that closely. So some of the work that I was just doing in Lowndes County in Alabama with a fantastic NGO that works in Alabama, the Alabama Center for Rural Enterprise. Basically, what the situation in Alabama is a complex conundrum of soils that are really heavy, then low-income communities, huge racial disparities. So the county I was looking at is more than 70% African-American. And we don't have, in Lowndes County, there's hardly any municipal infrastructure. So many of these smaller dispersed communities are not connected to a sewerage network. So what they're expected to do is put in their own on-site sanitation system, basically putting in septic tanks underneath their house. But because the soil is so difficult and because they're low-income communities, what these systems would require them is to put in systems that are much, much more expensive than their entire annual income. We're speaking of systems that are $26,000, something in that range. So people can't afford to put those in. And what we see is what they call a straight pipe in many homes, which is basically a pipe that runs from the bathroom into the yard and then into the woods, but doesn't really take wastewater very far away from the home. So we see it accumulating in people's yards. We see a lot of overflow. Now imagine that combined with heavy rains, and climate change is only going to exacerbate that. So what we see is basically people who live in a very contaminated environment.
Can that excrement and effluent then get into the drinking water supply?
It does in some instances.
This is right here in the United States.
Yes.
Alabama, we're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
So what's being done about this, if anything?
Well, I think when we look at different levels, there's a lot that's being done. I mean, the NGO I mentioned, I mean, they've been advocating about changes to this for years, if not decades. It does get increasing attention in the media. There's a lot of advocacy work around it. One thing that has changed, it used to be that a lot of the people who were not able to put in their own sanitation systems, it's not just that they don't get any support from the state, they were even criminalized and they got arrest warrants for not putting in the system. So you can see that, I mean, having wastewater in the yard, there is a public health hazard, but by no means is it a solution to then blame the people for not putting in systems where people can't afford them. So from a human rights perspective, what is really required is support people to do what needs to be done, to put in these systems, to provide support, including financial support, to create that environment where people can actually follow these regulations.
Are there any other parts of the United States where you have found a lack of adequate sanitation?
Well, there are many other parts where we have huge issues with both access to water and sanitation. You've probably all heard about the drinking water crisis in Flint. There are huge challenges with disconnections from the water supply, which then both affects access to sanitation and to water. Whether you look at Detroit, whether you look at Headland Park in Michigan, whether you look at Boston, whether you look at Baltimore, it's an issue in many, many cities across the U.S. In California, you have other issues.
Of shortage of water.
A shortage of water, yes. But, you have the general drought, but then you also have, once you get into the Central Valley in California, you have a lack of infrastructure in many of the smaller communities. You have issues that largely affect Latino communities that are disenfranchised, that are unincorporated, that can't really afford the infrastructure. So there again, we see contaminated water. We see wastewater infrastructure that doesn't work. So you see these issues repeatedly, and the patterns that emerge is really that it all affects often minority communities, low-income communities, and disenfranchised communities in the U.S.
You argue that sanitation is a right, but that the U.N. has often coupled the right to access to water with the right to sanitation.
Well, let me start by saying that I think the right to sanitation has benefited immensely from being coupled to water. I mean, sanitation is such a taboo topic that no one really likes to talk about it. So kind of being this little cousin that is attached to water, I think has allowed us to make huge progress on sanitation. But that being said, I argue that sanitation really is so different from water in so many different respects that we need to decouple water and sanitation.
Why has sanitation been a low priority for many governments, in your view?
Well, just think about it. I mean, imagine you are a minister or somewhere in public service in a local government or wherever. I mean, what would you like to have your image associated with? I mean, do you want to stand next to a school opening that? Do you want to stand next to a waste water treatment plant? Or do you want to have your name associated with putting in new latrines in a village or an informal settlement or some other community? So I think a lot really has to do with that, that no one really wants to speak about sanitation and excreta. So I think it's that's one big reason. And then it also has to do with the fact that sanitation is something where we feel that we largely rely on the individual, that's something really private and personal. And I mean, as the case in Alabama shows, it's on the individual homeowners to put in place sanitation systems. So I think many, many governments don't even see the need to get engaged, to develop policies, to provide the financing. It's something where we all feel, well, it can be left to the individual.
This is not a problem with a prohibitive cost price tag on it. So what is the problem?
The problem often is political will and the lack of political will and the lack of prioritizing something so basic. And I think once we get around that and once we start prioritizing these communities, then there usually is a way to find the financing. There certainly is a way to make the technology happening. And there's a way to overcome these obstacles. But there are many studies that show that in the long term, I mean, once we invest in sanitation, that the returns are much, much higher than the initial investment.
Inga Winkler is at Columbia University at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights. Thank you so much for talking about this important issue.
Thanks to you. I greatly appreciate your interest.
I'm Judy Valente.
The United Nations officially recognized access to adequate sanitation as a basic human right in 2010. Inga Winkler's talk on water and sanitation, a human rights perspective, is Thursday at 7 p.m. in the Prairie Room of ISU's Bone Student Center. Winkler spoke via Skype with Judy Valente.